Public Service Project. I am Kate Dallaire, and I originally thought I wanted to do this podcast to better understand who public servants are and what drives them. And while that's true, what I see now is that I'm also trying to wrap my mind around who we are as a nation through a deeper understanding of the people who come from all over America to serve and protect and improve this country in a variety of ways. And it's time to get creative about thinking about what service looks like. I'm really excited to talk to today's guest in particular because she's been breaking the mold in the field of national security for years. Maggie Feldman-Pilch is a true unicorn. She is the founder of NatSec Girl Squad, a community that builds and supports competent diversity in national security and defense through its professional development, programming, and cross-sector collaboration. Maggie is passionate about making national security relevant, interesting, and accessible, especially to millennial and cusper American women through the Non-State Actress Project. She's an advisor at Washington Office and has also brought her expertise to the Atlantic Council, Guidehouse, and the American Security Project, among other places. Maggie, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm so excited to be here, and I think this is such a fabulous concept and program, and like, what a great way to spend some time.
It is such a great way to spend time, and it just gives me so much positive energy. And I've been having such cool conversations throughout my career and thinking like, oh man, I bet other people would benefit from hearing that conversation. Yeah. And so I'm excited to finally be doing this. And I've been wanting to tell you for the longest time that your community, NatSec Girl Squad, really gave me like the boost that I needed to launch into my own career in government and national security, because I was in grad school at the time that I found NatSec Girl Squad. And I was kind of like, so I had graduated undergrad like a decade prior and had three kids and had a whole other season to my career, but was holding out hope that I was going to like bust my way into the federal government some way, somehow. And I could not figure out how, and I didn't have the mentors that I needed to say, okay, you've identified the what, but here's who you actually need to talk to, or like, here's what you really need to flag on your resume. And your community helped me so much.
Oh my goodness. So thank you. I didn't know that.
It's true.
That's amazing. It makes me really happy to hear that. And in particular to hear your story and to know that like it didn't just come to you like right out of undergrad.
Oh my God.
Because no. This is the vibe of NatSec Girl Squad. This is the vibe of national security that I am so passionate about. Like, look, Big Ten opened everyone, whether you were right out of undergrad or not. And if you were right out of undergrad and you went to undergrad right after high school, great. Or if not, also great. But you don't have to decide who you are at 18 or 22, right? And so to know that, like you said, you had a season of life, a season of career, you had kids, and you were like, hey, there's this thing that like I haven't done yet that I'm going to do. That is what NatSec Girl Squad is for, right? And to know that, right, the purpose of this community is not to be like this weird cult that gives you all the answers. It is there to be a toolkit. And you are the poster child of that, right? Like, it is a toolkit. It is a thing. It's Costco. You show up and like, you got to know, like you may not know everything that exists in the Costco, but you explore said Costco, you can taste test. Like you have to take some initiative there, right? Like even just the parking garage at a Costco is a lot. and the people who work at said Costco will do everything they can for you, but it's really on you. So as honored and flattered as I am to hear that, like, it's really a testament to you that like this was a thing that you wanted and you made the most out of it and like continue to do so. So yay you.
Well,
like,
thank
hard
you.
Yes.
I mean, I showed up to Costco and I said, oh my God, I can get protein powder for life here.
Hell yeah,
and
you can.
I'm still feeling jazzed about
yes,
it.
Yes. I love that. I love that. When I tell people that like to me, NatSec Girl Squad is Costco, they either really get it or they really don't. And again, like NatSec Girl Squad is a big tent. Just because if my analogies work for you, great. If they don't, also great. I find that like the OGs of NatSec Girl Squad who have been around for 10 years or more, they're like, because they started out with me when NatSec Girl Squad first started, they're used to like my crazy analogies of like, this is Costco. and it works for them. And then the younger folks or the newer folks, they're like, I'm sorry, what did you just say? Because they have like the newer and or younger community leaders who have come in, which is to me like a huge mark of success, is that it's not just me. Like we had an event just in the last couple of weeks, and we had literally hundreds of people there, which blew my mind because it was like on a Wednesday in a part of town that I was like, who wants to come to this on a Wednesday? So many people had no idea who I was, and I was like, this is my greatest joy. I could stand in this corner and be alone and have quiet time.
Because it's
And it was
self-sustaining.
great,
You've built
right?
this
That's the
self-sustaining
goal.
community.
That is the goal. Like I never wanted to run a cult, y'all. Like I'm the ninth of 11 children. If I could, if I know it's like really unsettling for people to hear that information, but also it clears up a lot of confusion. Yeah, like this was never intended to be a cult, right? I think the same thing that you described as you were like trying to figure out what's next for you is what bore Natsit Girl Squad into the world, right? Like there was no master plan. It was we are building the plane while it is in the air, and oh my gosh, now it is a rocket, and we are in, we are out of the ozone layer. We are far past the International Space Station, and unlike other people's spacecraft, we have not exploded. So mazel to us.
And so, since you dropped that little tidbit that you're the ninth of 1,000 children, I wanted to ask you to tell me about little baby Maggie and when you decided that you wanted to blow the top off national security. So, why don't you tell me about that?
That's such a good question. So little baby Maggie versus the decision to go into public service and go into national security. So let me tell you two very quick baby Maggie stories, and then I will give you how I ended up where I'm at, kind of like a section of that story, and it hopefully maybe it will make more sense to you and everyone listening than it did to me at the time. So there are two stories that my parents love to tell, and they are both from my last 3 months of kindergarten. Okay, so this is a very like small chunk of time we're talking about, right? This is like a 90-day slice of
Right.
life. I'm like five. I was really into Titanic. I was a woman of the age. And something that many people are not aware of about me, if they know me primarily from my quote public or professional life, is that in addition to having a career in national security and an education in national security, I also have a career in an education in opera, which I think actually in retrospect makes a lot of sense. So in kindergarten, I was not a classically trained opera singer, but there were some early seeds. And as I mentioned, I was very into Titanic. And the TLDR is that it wasn't violent, but I did aggressively hijack the fourth grade public access television show and perform My Heart Will Go On. And the thing is I wasn't bad, and I was so much not bad that the local radio station put me on the local radio station, and that went directly to my head, right? So I had like that going on.
You're
So
like, okay,
keep.
more of this, more of
Yeah,
this.
more of this, right? And you'd think that that would then trigger like a star is born. And it kind of did, but not in the way that you would imagine. My immediate next step was that I had overheard in the teacher's lounge that the school was going to be tearing down our playground, our elementary school playground. It was made out of wood. And it was not in great shape, and kids were getting hurt, and there were splinters, et cetera, et cetera. And I wasn't devastated. I was livid, right? Because I had not heard in my slice of what was going on, what the replacement was going to be. And I was like, what are we going to do? We have to play. Like, this is not working for me. So over the course of about less than 48, but more than 24 hours, I put together a massive petition across the entire school to mobilize the entire kindergarten through fourth grade student body to ensure that the kids of the school, of this elementary school, would be directly involved in the design and selection of the new playground.
Wow.
And it was successful. And it meant that during my first grade year, while they were rebuilding the playground, every Friday, all of the classes in each grade, we would go and we would vote in this one other room. Everyone would have an assigned slot on the different components of the playground. And I neglected to tell my parents about either of these two things. So the following week, my parents were called in by the principal, and they had no idea why, and I refused to tell them why because I was like, So they meet with the principal, and both of my parents, on the one hand, are not shocked, and on the other hand, are flabbergasted. And apparently, to this day, this is what my father says happened, is the principal said, "Doesn't it terrify you that this was going on in your own home?" And my father said, "Everything about this child terrifies me." And he meant it from a place of love. And so this is a story more than 30 years later that still gets told. So you have that. Fast forward many, many years. I was reading an article in Vanity Fair. I was reading two articles in Vanity Fair. One was about counterfeit purses being made in New York City. In the basements of buildings on Canal Street. They were being made by people who were being trafficked in by transnational criminalized gangs, criminalized networks, mostly run by the Chinese Communist Party. And I also read an article about a man who I actually ended up later working for, named Paul Eaton, who is now a retired two-star from the US Army. And it was about his testimony about the surge in Iraq. And basically, when I went to college, I had intended to eventually afterwards get an MBA and work in corporate social responsibility for luxury consumer brands. That's clearly not what happened. It was never going to happen. So here we are.
Here we are. I mean,
Here we
so
are.
you got a little taste of organizing people for action and for justice, and it just kind of took off. So along the way, I'm sure you've encountered your fair share of haters.
Oh my
Have
gosh.
you have you been hurt or fueled by the haters, or maybe a little bit of both?
I think a little bit of both. There's a fine line. So my team will tell you that there is a time slot on my calendar on Fridays. This started maybe about 6 or 7 years ago. There's a time slot on my calendar for every Fridays. Every Friday, it's about 45 minutes, where we go through anything that's come in for the week. And because I say that there's two kinds of negative feedback. There are three kinds. There's constructive criticism, which I'm always down for. Give it to me. I've got nine brothers. Give me what you got, right? There's haters who are like ridiculous and mostly make me giggle. And then there's threats. And so there's about a 45-minute period on my calendar. It's always blocked off every Friday, where I call the FBI with anything that's come in from the week. It's not a special number that I call. There's a hotline for this stuff. I'm not the only woman in the world who does this. There are
No.
many, many women who do this. I talk about the fact that I do this because I think it's really important to not be ashamed. There have been times in my life where it has required more than 45 minutes and it couldn't wait until the end of every week. There have been times where I didn't need the 45 minutes. And some of it I am fueled by. The constructive criticism always fuels me. Some of the haters, some of the silly stuff I can ignore. Some of it fuels me. Some of it I'm like annoyed by. And I often talk about the fact that whether I want to be or not, I joke, but I mean this, that I am genetically engineered to not just survive, but thrive in situations that want to kill me. I am descended directly from people who have survived exclusively situations in which everyone wanted to kill them off. And yet here I am. My genes have made it. Whether that is, people who survived genocide or have the health profiles of a wet paper towel. There is, statistically speaking, I should not be here. And yet here I am. And I'd be living pretty good too. So it says to me that try as they might, I am genetically engineered to be really good at this. And I don't know, were you an America's Next Top Model watcher when it
Yes.
was of the time? Okay.
Yes.
Do you remember this episode when Tyra, like this woman was unhinged? Let's just be clear. I am not supporting many, probably any of the choices she made except for this one. But she gave them bedazzled cockroaches on leashes to do a photo
Yeah.
shoot. Do you remember this? Okay. I am
I
so glad that you remember this because
do.
I often refer to the fact that I am a bedazzled cockroach for democracy. And the number of people who say to me, oh my gosh, I've never heard that. That is exceptional. What an incredible phrase. And I'm like, I take full credit for the for democracy piece and the explanation of why I call myself that. But bedazzled cockroach on a leash was like the best thing that Tyra Banks ever gave us.
So
And
credit
I,
where it's due.
yeah, give credit where it is due. Like, I don't want to take credit for that. I want to take credit for my part of it. But like, I am a bedazzled cockroach for democracy. I am impervious to nuclear war. Like, try as you might to kill me. Ain't nobody done it before. You are not that special. And I do find joy and love in shiny objects that other people find no value in.
I
Here
love
we
that.
are. Yeah.
So I feel like you have like such a freedom of spirit and such an intellectual freedom and curiosity. And I imagine that those are some of the things that have made you not just successful, but also like able to navigate your career in a way that's really authentic and really innovative and allowed you to bring things to the table. Like you're obviously bringing something that is different and that's raising questions or providing a perspective that other people aren't already providing. And I'm wondering, like, what you think it is about you that has really enabled you to do that?
I think it's because I don't have any other option, right? It is not easy to be me. And I don't mean that like, oh, woe is me. You asked me about haters, and like, does it hurt? Does it fuel? The thing that I struggle with, and I've gotten a lot better about this, is that people think that I am the way that I am as a joke or by choice. I mean, nobody chooses this level of chaos. We have this joke in my family. It's Maggie's world and we're all visiting. And it's part joke, part truth. The way that I receive and process information is innate. It's not an act, it's not a choice, it simply is. And so, especially when I was first starting out, people, and it still happens now, right? But when I, especially in a professional setting, when I was first starting out, people assumed that it was either a gimmick or like that I just was fighting, that I was like trying to be special. And I'm like, it would be easier to be like everyone else. In theory, I would be miserable, but more importantly, it would be impossible. I cannot do it. And I don't mean I don't want to. I mean that I have tried mightily many, many times in my life. And what makes me laugh is that in the moments when I am trying the hardest, it seems to be when people notice how strange I am. Right? It's like when I seem to be sticking out the most. And so I just can't do it. And so I'm not good at it, right? And then all of my energy goes into trying to be like this other thing. Like, I'm not even a person. I'm like inhuman. I'm I it's People who know me really, really well and have witnessed the attempts, are deeply troubled and like unnerved by that. And I mean that in a literal sense. I'm a big fan of this saying, words mean things, and I try to be quite precise in my language. So I mean what I say. Even if it feels hyperbolic, I really mean that, like, people close to me who really know me, who have watched me try to be what is perceived as like regular by other people, even for split seconds, are super unnerved by it and are immediately concerned that there is something like seriously wrong with me. Like, someone once thought I was having a stroke. And I was like, no, I'm just trying to blend in.
They're
And I was
like,
like,
what's going on? And you're like, I'm being
yeah,
demure.
I'm being demure, very mindful. And they're like, oh girl, no. Because it's just not, my brain like cannot compute. And I mean that in a scientific way. I've had the unique opportunity and necessity to spend an awful lot of time looking at printouts of my own brainwaves as they compare to other people's brainwaves. And I can tell you scientifically, without any confusion and 100% certainty, that mine are different than the average person's outside of two standard deviations. So they're different. They're different because I'm different. Like, and the two things are the way that they are. And I've always been this way, as we discussed from kindergarten. So much of my life, so far, and I'm sure in perpetuity, at least as long as I'm here, has been and will continue to be in various ways, figuring out, okay, here's who I am and what I am. And here's what I want out of this life and what I want to contribute in this life. Here's what I have. How do I do that?
I love hearing you say this because it resonates so much. Like, I feel like we're kindred spirits at this moment. And I usually have this in common with people that I really click with. I think the fact that it took me so many more years than I originally expected to like arrive at my job in government, because I thought, oh, I'm gonna like graduate undergrad and have an awesome job at the State Department or whatever. And
Same, I
it
thought
took
that too.
so many years and experiences, but the fact that it did meant that I was
You were
older and had
better
so
for it,
many experiences under my belt, which meant that I showed up knowing exactly who I was. And this has been my favorite thing about getting older. Like embracing what you were just talking about. Like, I was not a cool kid. I was first chair
Oh, I was
clarinet.
so, oh my God, how's this? I was first chair of the thirds, which is so much less cool than being first chair clarinet. I was the kid who thought the first chair clarinets were cool.
Okay. Well, so, we get each other, right? So I was like, I eat in the band room with the band kids. Like, I'm cool. But by the time I reached like my mid-30s, when I was entering government, way behind where I thought I wanted to be, I actually knew who I was and felt like when I walked into a room, I understood what value I had to add. And that was kind of a pro and a con, right? Because a lot of these spaces in the field of national security still are rigid in many ways. And so, I mean, personally, I've always loved leaning into my individuality. So when I knew I was different and kind of stood out in a room, even just based on the words that were going to come out of my mouth or my inability to control my facial expressions, I liked that because I was like, I have a right to be here. I have something to add. But I think if I had been younger, I might have been more disturbed by that or more likely to conform if I could. And any time that I have ever tried to conform in a way that just really didn't fit who I am, I'm not sure if it was as obvious to everybody around me as you were describing, but I do know that I felt gross and drained
And
and
that
miserable.
counts.
And it really matters. And this is why, like, when you're doing something that feels like everything's aligning, like you're passionate about it, you're knowledgeable about it, and you're inspired and you're doing it in your way, it's the best feeling in the world. And it, like, I feel like it's something that's going to take off because it has the right energy behind it. You know what I mean?
I totally agree with that. And I credit There are a lot of things that made me possible. Yes, it's the genes, and it's a lot, but it's also like it's the genes, it's the luck, it's me. I give my parents an enormous amount of credit. I give my siblings an enormous amount of credit. I give my chosen family a lot of credit, and I give my undergraduate institution, Wesleyan University, an enormous amount of credit. My parents knew what they got, because I am so similar to both of them, in different ways. And they could have fought it, right? They could have tried hard to make me some other way. And Lord knows they, I grew up in a time and place that in I was very, very lucky. But it wasn't cool to be like odd.
And I
Right?
don't think it really ever is, because now
No,
that
it's
I'm
definitely
raising
not.
kids and my older two are in 4th and 5th grade, like all the things they come home and tell me, I'm like reliving my own childhood and
Right?
remembering what it feels like and how hard that is. But
Yeah.
it's also never going to change.
It's never going to change. And I lived so much of my childhood and through high school with very few people on my side, outside of my like immediate family. I had some teachers who were really on my side, and it's funny, they are still big parts of my life. And there were a lot of people who, when I say they were not on my side, they were like really not on my side.
You know what though?
And
I think that's probably because
that's, but it worked.
people who know who they are and are
Yes.
living their truth make other people uncomfortable because a
Oh
lot of
my,
other
and this
people are
is what my
not living
parents
that.
told me all the time. I was like 3 or 4 when my parents sat me down the first time, and I can remember this, and they were like, "You make people uncomfortable because you're just the way that you are," right? Like, I've been exactly the same way that I am since like a very young age, which is really interesting. And I mentioned I'm the ninth of 11, and I have two much younger brothers, one of whom is almost 9. He's just about 9, and that kid is he is on the outside 9. His insides, he's 75. And I'm like, yep, you are exactly who you are now. You were born who you are. And same with a 5-year-old. They're just whole people made small. And I think that has made a big difference. And to also grow up in a family where service and service to others and service to community and service to country was such a priority and is such a priority. Sort of like I was predestined. And then to find myself in an academic institution and community, where the first time I ever really found intellectual success, I know like people, the way that I talk about where I went to college, like can make some people really uncomfortable. However, other people who went to Wesleyan, of which there are quite a few in the national security and public service world, were like, I got you. And for those that are unfamiliar, I would encourage you to take a look at the president of Wesleyan. His name is President Michael Roth. He's also a graduate of the institution. He is exactly like almost everyone I know who went there. And he is somebody who is like really participatory in the public space. And that's all I'll say about that for right now. And that is the model from which we are all cut.
Like living your values and
Yeah,
practicing.
practical idealism is ain't no joke where we are from. And it's I think it's something that we are all like quite bound by. And I live in Washington, D.C. My life is here. Hopefully I will die here at very old age. This is my home. There are days right now where it is hard because people are just like every like all over the world, people are having a hard time, and somehow I wake up every day genuinely optimistic. with an enormous amount of hope. And people look at me and they're like, are you, again, like, are you on some sort of drug? Like, what is wrong? Are you having a stroke? And it's like, no. The hope and the optimism is not in the op like absence of other things. It is in spite of, right? We can contain multitudes, and I am comfortable with the multitudes because they live in there. I can't get rid of them. I've tried. So you have to coexist with them all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like when you are a bedazzled cockroach, you're like, I'm here, I'm surviving.
Like I am both very pretty and very ugly at the same time. Like other, I am grotesque and terrifying to many, many human beings, but I'm so shiny.
Well, I think you're so shiny and so
Thank
wonderful.
you. Thank you. I think you are so shiny and so wonderful.
Well, thank you. I have a million questions I would like to ask you, but then this will be like a 3-hour podcast and nobody will
We'd
make
be
it
like
till the
Joe
end.
Rogan. Oh,
Yeah. We can just take up the airwaves. Maybe
Be fine
another
with it.
episode after. But
Always.
I really want to ask you one final question so that we can
Sure.
come back to something that I said in your bio, which is the fact that
Yeah.
you're working on promoting competent diversity.
Yeah.
And that is a really, spicy kind of concept today, and I want to hear what that means to you.
Yeah. I am not interested in people who can't do things doing things. I think people who can do things should do them.
It's
That's what that
pretty
means.
simple. Yeah, it's pretty
Yeah,
simple.
it's like very, people are like, And I'm like,
Yeah.
no. That's it. That's the whole book.
But it's like, it's worth saying this whole conversation we've had has actually been about
Yes.
diversity of thought, about neurodiversity, about
Yeah.
diversity of experience and approach, and like how that is an asset. And sometimes it feels silly to say the obvious things, but it's true. Having
Yeah.
a diverse national security workforce is so healthy and so productive.
It is utterly essential. So look, because I'm sure that the SEO will pull some people in here who are looking for a reason to be angry. Let me say this to them, because you are actually my favorite people. The reason you are my favorite people is because I believe that you came here and you've stuck around this long in the conversation because you actually are in the gray zone. You can be convinced. You love America, and your fear is that people who can't do things are doing things. And you want to be reassured. And let me reassure you. Let me say this to you. The reason it matters that we have an idea, not just that there are people who speak Spanish who are in the intelligence community doing analysis, but that we have different kinds of Spanish speakers, meaning native speakers and non-native speakers, and that we have different kinds of Spanish being spoken, and we know where and how they learn their Spanish, is because Spanish is different in different places. Arabic is different in different places. And if you are translating Arabic in, Oman, and then you are translating it in Saudi Arabia, the slang is different. Also, I once had someone tell me that they were an Arabic translator and they were looking at language in Afghanistan. And I needed to lay down because I was like, that is actually not a relevant skill in this place. There are very few black women in China, as I'm getting bit by my cat. Very few black women in China, even fewer black women in China know anything about cybersecurity. I really love America. I would like for this inherent difference to be a competitive advantage. So I would like for people who can do things to do things. And I would like to exploit every single possible advantage for America to be the best in the world. As an epileptic, no one should give me a gun and let me join the Marine Corps. That is the very reason that I do what I do, because I would have liked to join the Marine Corps, but it turns out I shouldn't. Me joining the Marine Corps is not competent diversity, because that's someone who can't do something doing something. Does that work, friends?
Makes
Hopefully,
sense.
that's added some clarity for our friends in the gray zone.
I think it probably has, and I appreciate your help with that.
Yeah, anytime.
And I just appreciate everything that you are doing with your career, with your energy. Like, you really said it when you said that you're just trying to figure out like what you can accomplish, how you can take the material that you have and what good you can do. And I think you've been really creative about it. And that is such a great example, especially for public servants who are finding themselves now making a pivot, like by choice or not.
Or by force.
Right.
By choice or by force.
Right. Yep. And so I am privileged to be sitting here and talking with you. And I hope that other people listening to this episode will know that there are resources out there. NatSec Girl Squad is a great community. I mean, there are so many others like it. And by the way, like, men are in the community too.
Yes. And I'm not checking.
Right.
Not my business. I don't have that kind of time.
Like, the point is, like, network, take advantage of the resources available to you. And we're going to find new ways to support each other and support our country and make great policy. And
Amen.
I am just so glad that you sat down with me today, and I hope we can continue talking offline and record more of our thoughts later.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for taking this project on. These are interesting things, and it's interesting times, and I hope that if this reaches one person who didn't know something, job well done.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I keep trying to think about who would I like to reach. I don't really want to preach to the choir, although there's nothing wrong with that either, because maybe the choir needs to feel a little seen too and be like, there are people like me.
Everybody wants to be a little hugged.
Yeah, yes. There are people having the same experience as me, so there's value in that too. But I would really love to reach like people in my hometown that I grew up with who are not really necessarily connected in Washington or even interested in what's happening in some of these policy circles, but actually really care when they think about it. And I want to make like public service feel accessible and national security feel interesting and not exclusive. And so thank you for being kind of a part of that larger mission with me.
Thank you for having me.